I am Platt on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Sean Cranberry joins me again. He is the executive director of the BC and Yukon Book Prizes, a post he took up in February of this year. He joins me now to catch up, and with all the activity in his life, I'm happy he's made the time. He hasn't been on in 7 years. He's been busy. He founded and continues to produce the Real Vancouver Writers series, as well as Books on the Radio, the podcast. Sean's a freelance writer, website designer, and consultant. He's even managed the Storm Crow, not the tavern.
Yeah, both the tavern, the tavern and the alehouse as well, yeah.
Visit seancranberry.com for more information. The website for the BC Yukon Book Prizes is at bcbookprizes.ca. Since 1985, they have been celebrating the achievements of writers and publishers in this part of the world. I had the honor this past year of sitting on the judging panel for the Hubert Evans Nonfiction Prize. It was a marvelous way to read this region and view it through the books it published in 2018. Perhaps we'll discuss the process by which books are shortlisted and the winner is chosen, as I've gotten questions about it. What I want to talk to Sean about, though, are the recent changes, including a new award and a returning award. At Sean Cranberry is the Twitter handle. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Sean Cranberry. Mr. Cranberry, good morning.
How you doing, Joe? Good to be back.
Good to see you again.
Yeah, man.
So there are seven prizes. There's a fiction prize, a nonfiction prize, poetry, two children's prizes, a regional prize, and a bookseller's prize, and then the returning Lieutenant Governor's...
Yeah, Award for Literary Excellence.
Which I guess is a Lifetime Achievement Award, right?
Yeah, sort I think of? That's the easy, that's the shorthand version of what happens there, yeah.
And so that'll be back for next year.
Yeah.
And there's a new award named after Jim Diva.
That's right. Yeah, that, so, you know... One of the things that happened right away when I started was we got in touch with the good people at the LG over in Victoria, and they were interested in bringing the award back, and we were obviously interested in bringing it back. So that took a little bit of time, and I was in the collaborating with those guys and working on getting the details together for the return of the Lieutenant Governor's Award for Literary Excellence when I got a Facebook message from a friend I haven't heard from in many years, and she asked if we were interested in adding a new prize. And, of course, the answer is yes. And so it turned out to be a gentleman named Bruce Smith, who owned, with Jim Diva, the Little Sister's bookshop down in Davie Village.
Yeah.
Right. And he was doing some end-of-life planning, and he, I guess, had a moment where he thought to himself that he wanted to really honor Jim's legacy by having a prize. So we got together and we talked, and Bruce was like, "I want to keep this real simple. I got some money. I want to kind of endow this award for 10 years, and I want it to be the sort of book that would win this award is the kind of book that would get stopped at the border." You know? And he called it the Shit Disturbers Award. He wanted a book that was going to be the type of book that would have sent a shiver of fear through government censors back in the day because, of course, of the legendary...
The work that the Little Sisters have done in terms of really promoting freedom of speech in this country.
Yeah. Well, they sued the border services of Canada and took it all the way to the Supreme Court and won in a legendary censorship case.
Yeah, we owe them a great debt, and this is a marvelous way to see that every year. So it is a book, and what's the criterion?
The criteria is that it's called the Jim Diva Prize for Writing That Provokes. And it was tough to get the language around that because it's not like fiction or nonfiction. It's open to poetry, nonfiction, children's lit, graphic novels, whatever. So long as the book is written with that kind of attitude, and it's a book that's intent on not changing things.
Yeah,
you know. So the criteria is really, does this book have a purpose that is its intent and in its execution? Tries to rattle kind of the status quo and move conversations along and maybe make more space for future books and future arguments.
Yeah, and this is the perfect part of the world, BC and the Yukon, where we have seen writing like that over the years. Mm-hmm. And it's a good chance for recognition, obviously, for those writers that we all read, that we all are appalled by or enjoy and root and are so much a part of the what's so unique about this part of the world. I mean, you're from elsewhere.
Yeah. But I settled out here for those very same reasons.
Yeah, it is a special place, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it really is. I mean, you sat on the jury last year for the Hubert Evans, right?
Right.
And it was Sarah Cox's book on the Sightsee Dam.
No, that was she won another prize.
Oh, the regional prize.
Yeah. Roderick Haig regional prize. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Ours
yeah.
was the one that won it was the Woo Woo.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Marvelous book. Yeah, Lindsay Wong's marvelous book. Yeah.
Yeah, but I wanted to say about Sarah's book, and sorry that I confused the prizes, but that book on the Sightsee Dam is the kind of book, I'm so glad that it won last year, because it's an important book.
It is.
But it's the kind of book, too, that you could see being the type of book that would be entered and have at least be shortlisted for the Jim Diva Prize.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be, whatever.
Yeah, I had Sarah when the book came out, and I remember reading it and thinking just whatever one thought about Sightsee, how wonderfully written and researched it was.
Yeah, it's a smart book.
Yeah, and do you get a sense from the authors that you deal with what a prize like that means for a book like that?
I think it varies from writer to writer, but I think, you know, like it's a question of it does a lot for visibility. In the industry, they call it discoverability of books. You know, like prizes are an indicator for the average reader or the average person out there of quality and of general interest. So I think, you know, besides the fact that you're getting last year was $2,000, you know, this year we're upping it to $3,000. Of cash in your pocket that you can go and do whatever you want with, go take a vacation, buy some books, you know. I think that it's important because it gives their book a second life, because the books that have that are entered have been published for a year time the gala comes around and we announce the shortlist and everything. It's a whole year, right? So all of the marketing and promotion that has gone into that book has already more or less settled by that point for almost every book. Some books, you know, like Lindsay's book was up for Canada Read, so it had an extra jump in there.
Right,
There are thousands of books published every year, and very few of them make it onto any short lists anywhere, right?
Yeah, I get, as you know, I get a lot of books over the course of a year. When they sent the books that were being considered for the prize, there were a lot of books that I hadn't seen, you know?
For sure.
And I tend to think that I'm in touch with everything, right?
Yeah.
But again, as I said in the introduction, it's a marvelous way to read the province, whether you see the short list for fiction or poetry even.
Yeah.
You get a real sense of the era and the times that we're living in.
It's a snapshot.
Yeah. And you know, I go back on the website and I look back at what one is in, you know, 1988, for example, or 2004. And you do get a sense, and that's something that I felt when I was asked to join the jury. There's this burden is not the right word, but you're worried about how whether you're on the right side of history, if you will.
Okay. And how do you mean that?
Yeah, you're wondering what sort of book should we, you know. You know, because political consideration, because it's at the end of the day, it's a voting thing, right? I have to vote for the books that I like, and I have to, unfortunately, not include books I don't like.
Yeah.
So I'm making a choice here, a subjective choice at that point. But, you know, you also have to think objectively about which of these books, of the 100 or I think it was 80 to 100 books.
Yeah, it was a lot of books.
Yeah, which are you know, indicative of where we are as a province or what we're reading, what we're thinking about, or what is essentially good achievement as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I served on the jury back in 2011 for the fiction, and I think there were something like 60 or 70 books. And, you know, you've got a filtering process because there's no way you could possibly read every page of every book. And I don't know whether I'm telling tales out of school here for people, but it's the truth. There's just too many. So you do filter.
Yeah.
Right. And then I'd like what you said about there's the subjective and the objective. You want to be fair and you want to be objective as you can.
Yeah.
But you are a person and a reader who the prizes is entrusting.
Yeah.
And so it's expected that you're going to bring some sort of subjectivity to it, of course, or we wouldn't have asked. Right. So at the end of the day, I guess, and maybe I'll just jump ahead because is an answer.
Yeah, yeah.
This I'm going to go to a place where I was planning to go later after we opened it up. But, you know, really, to me, one of the things about prize culture is there's a terrible sense amongst some people that if they don't win, then they've lost.
Right.
And that's nothing could be further from the truth. I think that from my perspective on how the prizes function, especially once we get to the shortlisting, where we've announced the mm-hmm. five books in each category that are shortlisted, that those at that point we could really just stop.
Right.
You know, because those are the books that the judges have felt through the system that we have in place. Are the best.
Yeah.
Are the best five of that particular category. Yeah. Best five works of fiction. Best five works of regional nonfiction. That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, for people who care about that particular category, maybe those are the books that they need to read.
Yeah.
But of course, because we live in this society that demands one book to rule them all.
Sure.
We have to go through, and then there's
the political process of picking a winner and who's a winner.
Yeah, you get to pick a winner, and of course you do, and of course that book is great.
Right.
But I just want to say that chances are that all five books in any category are equally as great, and you know, these things can vary.
And not to diminish the five that are chosen, you could easily have another five, say.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like last year there were, and you know, like the whole like adjudication process.
We'll talk about that.
But yeah, you could easily have 7, 10.
Yeah.
You could do a long list, you know. But at, you know, our resources in terms of the personnel that we have is very limited,
so we can't
really do that.
Now, the UConn has always been part of the awards.
Yeah,
but it has taken on I'd say more of a focus now since you've been there.
Yeah. So UConn has always been in our constitution as a
mandate,
an area that we're serving. But of course, it's hard when you're, especially when you're managing from a place like Vancouver. And over the years, I don't know that there's been books perhaps written by UConners that have been submitted, but we've never done events up there until just this year. And so I saw it as an opportunity. My partner, Carly, was at the Pierre Burton House in Dawson City. So I had an opportunity to go up there and meet people. And I was at the Klondike Institute for Art and Culture, and I was doing a little talk on the prizes. And the commissioner of UConn, a woman named Angelique Bernard, came up to me and was like, "Well, let's talk because we're interested in doing something with you guys. We don't know what it is." So eventually, we decided that in good faith we were gonna extend the name from BC Book Prizes to BC UConn Book Prizes, and that we were gonna announce it at the Print and Publishing Festival in Dawson City in June. And so we went up there and hosted some events, and Eden Robinson was there, and Trish Salah, and. I met with Angelique and we talked, and she said that they wanted to do a prize. And so that will be the third prize that we're going to bring up, a second new prize that we'll hopefully announce in the next week, where that'll be the first prize for recognition of UConn literature ever, as far as I know.
So you've spent some time there, as you just mentioned.
Yeah.
What is it like up there? Because I've never been there, obviously, and it's a
place. It's amazing.
Because the North has so much mystery for a lot of us.
And hopefully we can kind of dispel some of that.
Yeah.
You know, through better inclusion. But most of my time I spent in Dawson City, and it's a beautiful, old, well preserved town. Still, it feels like you're in a Coen Brothers Western, you know, and it's everyone's, you know, everyone's a little weird. They've got a great art community, a really strong writing community, but painting and photography, just a lot of really great people up there. And it's going to be really cool to start to develop that relationship with, like, UConn writing communities.
It'd be great to read what's been, you know, what's written about there, you know, and as you just said a moment ago, dispel some of the myths or the mysteries that we have. Authors that are shortlisted as well as winners go on tour.
Yeah.
That'll obviously continue. Will that grow in the next year or so?
Yeah. Well, we're hoping so. We're hoping to to be able to do more in the north. Although our job really is to send, not every writer goes on the, tour, because that's like, there'll be 45 shortlisted books potentially this year. So it's a select few, and timing is important. And but we try and get out to remote, smaller communities throughout the province and up into the territory. So that means areas where, you know, writers don't have opportunities to get to very often, especially if they're going to promote their books, and areas where schools or communities don't have the opportunity to meet with writers very often. So we try and plan it in ways where we can get out and get to people and get rooms full of people for writers to connect with in remote areas. And I'm looking forward to that. I think that we can do, you know, a lot of our funding is grant related. So we put together plans that we propose to places like Canada Council, and we say, this is what we want to do. We want to do a really good job of connecting with Northern BC and Yukon and start to kind of blend the colors there and build that community connection, right? And then down into the interior, along the coast, down to the south, around to Soyuz and areas. It's a big job, and we can't hit everything, but it's a big part of it. And I went on a bit of a tour just to see it last year up to Powell River, and it was great.
Yeah,
it was great. It was cool to see how engaged high school students are with writing and the connection between the writers and the students. You could really see writers were like, wow,
Yeah,
I remember when that writer came to my school and talked to me, and you can see them really kind of lean into the programs or the teachings or the sessions that they're doing with these kids. It's pretty magical.
I can still remember authors coming into elementary school classes.
Yeah,
and getting to ask questions. Maybe I got it from there.
Yeah.
And how fun and edifying and cool, you know, as you just said, it is to meet someone who's completed an achievement that one can only dream of at that age, say.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like magic, you know. Yeah. Like, I think that, I can remember myself, I can only speak for myself, but at that age I was like enamored with probably some very terrible books and the idea of being a writer. And in our society, writers are kind of like magical beings.
Indeed.
You know? And so I think there is that, there is something there. That's really special that we do through the tour that I think is, I'm hoping that we can build on it and expand it and change it maybe a little bit. I mean, you know, there's plans that we have for things like, you know, digital interactions and some archiving around, making it more accessible, making face-to-face, real-time interactions with authors and remote communities more accessible through digital.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, we're still working on that.
You mentioned the increase in the prize money,
which
is obviously important. It's wonderful to recognize these authors. I was just thinking that sometimes the prize money might be more than the advance that an author would get.
It's possible. Yeah. Well, you know, it's you'd have to talk to the publishers and the agents and the writers about that. But I think advances in today's society, especially small presses, because a lot of the presses that submit to that are existing out here on the coast and that submit to the prizes are small presses, right? They're not throwing around the big money.
There was some talk of, prior to this year's gala in I can't remember, was it April or May now?
It was in April.
April. About the cost of attending this thing, and there was one author who mentioned.
Yeah.
Who was a nominee, a shortlisted author, who who didn't think that they could make it to the gala.
Yeah.
Have there been changes in that regard in terms of accessibility?
Yeah, for sure. Not to get into it too much, but, you know, I love Shazia, and she's wonderful.
Right.
And we had that, we had an exchange on Twitter, and it was good. So the deal basically is that the publishers, as part of the agreement, when they submit, is that should the book be shortlisted, that you would purchase a ticket for that. And there was a bit of a misunderstanding around that, and it was all good. But I did make a promise during that exchange that we would that we would bring down the cost for authors. So this year going in, we have a tentative agreement with the board to ensure that whatever the minimum, the break-even point is,
right,
is where the authors will be. And that's whether they're on the shortlist. I mean, the shortlist will all be taken care of.
Yeah.
But if you're a member of the writing community in BC, Yukon, and you want to come, then we will not charge you full price because you're a member of the community. And my feeling is that there will also be, because right around that time, I got some messages from other writers who had either been shortlisted for the prizes in the past or who are just good community members.
Yeah.
And they said, let me know who I need to buy a ticket for, and I'll take care of it for you.
Right.
So my feeling is that we'll also try and work together a pool of some kind that will either help to kind of defer costs or create gratis tickets or something like that. But I feel like there's a lot of people out there who want to help and who know that a lot of writers, you know, aren't making a lot of money, but want to attend. And it's important for me. I want to see these people in the room. I want to see the community in the room.
It's a well-attended event, as I had the pleasure of attending it because I was on the jury. It could be a bigger room, though. I mean, it could could have more people in it, and I think it would make for a nicer event too. I think in terms of if you've had I don't know if double. I mean, the room itself could fit more people, right?
Yeah.
To have really to foster that community that's there.
Yeah. No, I think that it's. I hope that it grows. I think that it will. And I think, you know, the couple of different ways we can do that, because it's a celebration of the whole community. So the writing industry, people who are like the people who print the books come in, they fly in from Toronto and come out and they do it. And I what I would love to see is more writers who are just active in the community, who are publishing now, who are maybe just starting out or kind of mid-career or whatever. But I'd also like to see more writers who have kind of like alumni, you know, like the Fred Waughs of the world and other writers who have won in the past. It's up to us to kind of work on it to invite them and to make them welcome. And again, with this kind of pool of keeping costs to a minimum for those types of things, I'd really like to see that kind of generational cross section.
Exactly.
So that we can show like, the future and the past together celebrating the present, I guess.
And that's what award shows generally are, right? That's what they are. Well, let's talk about the process because I had no idea getting into this, what was involved. Yeah. When I was asked by your predecessor if I would sit on the panel, I was honored, naturally. Then I looked at, before I signed on, what the process was. And you know, I went to the website. It didn't really say what happens. And so there are three jurors. And we're...
Per category.
Yeah. And we're to read as much of the books as we can. And then we vote on... I guess five books, numbering them, but 5 to 1, our, I guess, first choice and one being our fifth choice.
Yeah.
And then excluding each other, submit this, and then the shortlist is generated from that.
Yeah.
And then with the points added up and the winners. And again, I went into the dinner, people asked me who's going to win. I didn't know who's going to win. You know, the minute they open the envelope, that's when we know who won. Is that system, that system will continue, will it?
It may. We're hoping that it can be a little different than that. There are things that you can get into problems with those kinds of ballots because ties.
Sure.
For one thing, and. You know, like one of the things that happened with when we agreed to speak with the lieutenant governor's people and to bring that prize back was we were connected with the folks at the BC Achievement Foundation. And the BC Achievement Foundation has agreed to come on and help us with adjudication, especially around the LG. So what I like about what we're working on with the BC Achievement Foundation is that I'm speaking strictly about the Lieutenant Governor's adjudication right now, but I would like to see it carry over into the other categories, is a situation where you provide all of the material to the judges. You get your three judges mm-hmm. that you trust, and they're going to triangulate the best possible scenario for you. You supply them with all of the material that they need. In this case, it won't be books because these people like it's a lifetime
career.
Achievement.
Yeah, their
career.
Bios and their yeah.
So
clips.
Bios and various resources yeah. to give you a sense of who they are. You give the jury time to think about it. You allow them access to each other so that they can talk about it. Mm-hmm. And then you bring them into a room at the BC Achievement Foundation downtown, and you get them into that room for an adjudication session where, you know, at the end of it all, they know who the winner is. I'm not exactly sure how that would work or will work for the rest of the categories, but I would like to see something similar to that yeah. happen for the prizes, where because I think that if you know, and I know that they encourage people to talk
sure.
to email each other, maybe have a Skype convo yeah. or whatever. But I've heard that that has varying degrees of success.
Yeah. I mean, we were told that one of the rules was that we wouldn't, we could reveal ourselves as a juror. And I did that on Twitter, just I thought to be accountable.
Sure.
But I couldn't say who the other two were
no.
until the shortlist. Because, and that makes sense because, you know, you don't want people campaigning or you know, undue pressure or whatever on those people.
Yeah.
We could communicate with each other however way we wanted. Teresa Kitchkan was on the Sunshine Coast. Ivan Coyote is here in Vancouver,
yeah.
but traveling all over the place, so getting together was not possible.
Right.
So there were a lot of emails exchanged between the three of us. But then at the same time, your folks said, well, no, if you don't want to participate, you don't have to. You just mm-hmm. read the books, submit the lists,
yeah.
and then you just submit your ballot, and then that's it. We did have a lot of conversations amongst ourselves. One of the things that I found a benefit was that there were certain books that obviously we would look at, but we didn't seriously consider.
Yeah.
There was a book on a collection of essays, for example. Half of them were nonfiction, half of them were fiction.
Okay.
And so the argument was made by one of us that since it's a nonfiction prize, we're only looking at half the book at this point.
Right.
There was another book where one juror felt that it didn't need to be considered because it was ghostwritten.
Okay. Yeah,
and,
well, that's a problem.
And it said so in the book.
Okay.
And so when
who
I...
Who do you give the award to in that case, right?
Yeah. So at that point, I hadn't even opened the book yet. I hadn't cracked the book yet.
Yeah.
So I didn't bother looking at that book because it was decided amongst us that was not going to be.
And that's a fair part of the process.
Yeah. Right? And but the most edifying thing was hearing from the two other judges and hearing what they liked.
Mm-hmm.
And me giving them what I thought I liked, and then hearing back from them and saying, okay, yeah, well, you're right about that, but that's not really, you know, that mm-hmm. I didn't like that book. And I, personally, I found that there were books that I liked that I didn't think were worthy of the prize.
Yeah.
You know, and there were books that I didn't like that I thought were just excellent pieces of writing
yeah.
that, you know, obviously
that's
moved up.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's the objective part of looking at things at that point, right? So I did think the way that we had it, communicating when we wanted to, was useful, I thought. One of the things I asked the two other jurors, Teresa and Ivan, was maybe we could come up with a long list
mm.
and exchange those and see where we are.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting to see, because I came up with a list of 24. I couldn't make up my mind, right? Teresa and Ivan
yep.
came up with, I think, about 10 or 12 each.
Sure.
And obviously there were books that, you know, that we all liked.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, it was good to see that we were roughly on the same page.
Yeah.
There was one juror who mentioned a book that I'd read and I thought was very good, but I didn't think much of it.
Mm.
And then they went and talked about it and just saying that this was an excellent book. Well, at that point, I had to look at it again.
Yeah.
And then I saw its merits, and then, you know, so that obviously had an influence in
that. Yeah. Oh, that's an important part of the process. That's why we want to bring people together.
Yeah.
Because we're worried. I'm worried. I don't know. We want to make sure that people are talking. Sounds like you guys had a great relationship as a jury.
Yeah, it was not as regular as I would have liked.
Sure.
Because we were busy reading, obviously, too, at the same time. Yeah. But we were all accessible, and we could.
Yeah.
I could see it being difficult if there was one juror who didn't want to, wanted to do this on their own, right? Mm-hmm. So, but at the end of the day, when I saw the long list that we came that we each produced, and I saw sort of the consensus, if you will, I felt relieved naturally because I might taste her eccentric, that we were on the same page.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, you know, Teresa and Ivan are both great readers. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So the fact that you would go through that process and get a filter in there, just in terms of the lists that you're creating, that's great.
Yeah, and as someone who's not a writer, and they're both writers.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I was worried about. In terms of whether I actually belonged on this jury, was whether I would, because I could have easily come up with five books that were not five books that they would have liked,
Sure. Yeah.
And so it was good at the end of the day to see, the as I said a moment ago, the consensus between us that we all looked at these books and we generally had the same, we had an idea of what was good.
Yeah.
And I think the shortlist reflected that, and obviously the winner did as well, So getting people in the room, that involves resources and the sort.
Yeah,
in the short term, I don't think that's...
We'll see whether we can do it for 2020. Yeah. I'm not sure. And by that, I mean like the 2019 books
for,
in 2020,
you know?
But it's something where... And this is a situation where we have our own like BC UConn Book Prizes podcast now, right?
So
Megan Cole, who's a librarian in Powell River, is leading the charge on that. She's doing awesome. She's interviewing writers who are shortlisted. And we're just kind of trying to figure out what we're going to do with that.
Yeah.
But a part of what we want to do is I want to use that podcast opportunity to talk to people, kind of like what you and I are doing right now. But other people who are in the prizes or adjudication, kind of like inside baseball stuff on this, and talk about what are other formats or processes that other not even necessarily literary awards, like what's a cool process that people in adjudication for, I don't know, like film?
Yeah, like the Websters, for example. I have friends who've sat on that panel, and it's generally the same thing. There's two or three jurors, and they take all the material, and then they decide on their... So there's some discussion.
Yeah.
I don't know what the balloting process is like, but I think it's similar to what happened here.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'd like to say something else for your listeners or for anybody who is curious about this, because it is kind of an opaque process.
Right.
So from my perspective, the way that it works is I don't choose juries. What I do is I charge juries. So once the jurors, so I'll rewind it a little bit. On the board of directors, there is a jury committee.
Right.
A couple of people who serve on the board of directors whose job it is to kind of bring in recommendations for people that other people on the board or other people in the community think would be great jurors, right? Mm-hmm. And so then they bring all that information together and they separate it by category. Like, this person is a successful poet. So obviously we're not going to ask them to adjudicate the regional nonfiction prize.
Sure.
But, so we also try to look back on previous year's winners, right? So I think this year,
Teresa was shortlisted in the category that we did, I think, 2 years prior or something like that. So it made sense because, she'd written in that genre.
Yeah.
And she knew the prize firsthand, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's involved in the conversation.
Right.
Like books are talking to each other over time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's involved in that kind of a conversation. It means that she or others like her, regardless of category, will be able to provide some contemporary insight. But not each one of the three should be cut from the same cloth,
right?
So it's interesting to me to watch how the jury committee for the prize for the board functioned, and And so I just want to, like, let people know that there is a process that is kind of, like, outside of the executive director's command, right?
Yeah.
And I'm happy for it to be outside of my command. So once they create these lists and then jurors, then we send out the invites to jurors and say, hey, are you available? Are you interested? Do you care? And they say yes. And then we say, great. Then it's my job to say, okay, so Joe, you're going to sit on the on this particular category. This is what the expectations are. This is where we're. This is what the timeline looks like. And we talk about it. Any questions? I'll answer. Yeah. And then we just ship you a couple of boxes full of books. Yeah. And that's that. So. I think what's really fascinating is creating juries that are diverse, that are featuring people for, like, the jury that you were on, you, Ivan, and Teresa. That's a phenomenal jury, right?
And it's not a, the other thing too is I want to ask: did you have people that say, "Oh, I'd like to be a juror"? Because I wasn't.
Yes.
Okay, because I was asked by Brian.
Yeah.
Last year.
Yeah.
I think I know who nominated me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I obviously had the chance to say no as well. So it's not like, you know, I was, you know, hey, you know?
Yeah. People do recommend themselves. Mm-hmm. But it's also, like, there's a lot of names. And there's a lot of great people out there. So there's, like, a huge pool of people to choose from.
The only quibble I have. Is I didn't know how this worked, right?
Mm.
Obviously, you know, Brian and your administrative director, filled us all in on what was going to happen. But I mean, I would have benefited maybe from hearing from former jurors, maybe, or something like that, or a guide even. I mentioned it on Twitter as soon as I was appointed, and then I heard back from people who'd. You know, judge that same prize and heard what they did and the sort, which was also funny because one juror, former juror, said that they put the piles in the books in three piles and read one pile and ignored the other two piles.
Sure. Everybody's got their own process. Yep.
So in terms of moving forward, I mean I am a fan of this process, and I think we came up with a short list and I thought the winner was the appropriate winner. I think it works, and I don't know. I mean, in terms of, is there a mood to change any of this or?
Well, there's just a mood that, you know, like, because of the change, because I took over for Brian in February, that there's. You know, there's opportunity now to make some changes because we have a new pulse. We have new ideas coming in and you know, sometimes, you know, Brian's been doing it and Rebus, pardon me, and the whole team have been there for a long time.
Yeah.
And they had their processes and change, you know, these kinds of changes in terms of new leadership, you're going to get. Change anyway. We don't want to screw with it to the point where everybody
votes for it, right?
You
don't want 1,000 people voting for prize. Yeah, you know.
No. It won't be a best of the internet.
A popular vote scenario, right?
Yeah. No, because that's why you pull. That's why you choose the jury so carefully, or as carefully as you can, because you know people are busy. But yeah, no, it will always be a jury process. I can't imagine it not being. And these people are professionals working within the same context, right? So,
You took up this job in February.
Mm-hmm.
What made you want to do this? Because, I mean, it is a lot of administrative work. You're a creative guy.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I thought, why would he want to do this? Mm. At the same time, I thought, no, he's a perfect fit because he's been trying to build communities as he has in this town.
Yeah.
With books and the internet and whatever else you've got your hand in over the years. I've known you for 10 years now.
Yeah.
It just seemed like a perfect fit that you would be the guy who would oversee this.
Yeah, thanks. I thought so too. I mean, it's one of those things where the timing was right. The timing was right. I was looking around. I had left the Stormcrow. You know, I spent 5 years there. And I was, you know, doing some freelance stuff and kicking around, and the opportunity came up, and I was like, you know, I feel like the prizes is an opportunity to do some stuff that can kind of change the game. It's an old, and by old, I just mean it's been around for a while. Mm-hmm. It's 35 years old organization that is well respected. Everybody knows what it is. Everyone has good things to say about it. Some people are a little critical, but that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, like Joe, like when we met, I had started Books on the Radio, and you were in your early days with the commentary. And you know, when I started Books on the Radio and then Real Vancouver, both of those projects were a direct result of me feeling like there was an opportunity that wasn't being met by not necessarily the community, because the community was doing their work, but there was like, for Books on the Radio, I felt like people needed to have honest discussions about books. You know, early days of mm-hmm. podcasting, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And now there are tons of literary or book-related podcasts. But in those days, it felt like we had to listen to sort of kind of quasi-marketing for books on the CBC.
Sure, yeah.
And that was all we had, you know? So anyway, I guess I felt like a similar thing towards the prizes is that there was a large opportunity to kind of step in and make some changes and develop new ways of communicating with writers and the community at large through the prizes.
Yeah.
You know? And I think we've already started that. And the fact that, that we've got, like, you know, that Bruce came out and was like, hey, you're the guys I want to give my money to that we can have this prize for Jim. That the Lieutenant Governor is coming back, that we're going to do something with UConn. I just think that it was a real opportunity to make some change in a short period of time, and I think you can see it's happening.
And not to bullshit you, because you already have the job.
Mm.
Everything you've done heretofore, you mentioned Books on the Radio.
Yeah.
What a community that fostered online.
Yeah.
Real Vancouver Writer Series around the time of the Olympics.
Yeah.
Just you found people would turn out to these events. Yeah. You know, I mean, there is the Writers Festival. There are other literary events in this town, but it was a marvelous compliment. And then you know, the Stormcrow. I mean, you were there for 5 years. You know, that was a great success.
Yeah.
So everything you've been able to do creatively has always worked out. And I you know, as you said, you in your short time there already have achieved a lot. And I can't imagine where you're headed in terms of. Just what this will mean for the community at large, for this town. Because, I mean, we're all talking about how effing expensive it is to live here.
Yeah.
And the hollowing out of the culture and the social scene and the sort of... But you have found in the 10 years I've known you this great appetite for books. Remember we were talking 10 years ago about we're going to start reading off our phones or devices.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, you know, people are still buying books, and people more people are buying books than are buying, you know. I mean, people still read on a screen, but books are still doing well, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, I can remember those conversations that we had 10 years ago, and I can guarantee you that at that point, the industry at large was still really kind of recalcitrant, right? It was just like, nope, the internet's a fad. Or everything is, we're all dying, and it's about to happen. And what happened, you could talk for days about this, but in a nutshell, what happened is they adapted, right? And I think it's the fundamental thing is that people care about books. People love books. People love writers. People love the language. They love what it does to their minds. They love new ideas. Although it sometimes doesn't look like that if you're only reading the internet, but it's true. And that's kind of what I banked on. And it's true when you challenge people that way and you create an environment that's open and inclusive, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've never been to a Real Vancouver Writer Series event,
mm-hmm.
but I follow them online and I see the pictures that people tweet out and I, you know, I can only see that it's grown in the 10 years, you know?
Yeah. 10th anniversary in February.
Yeah, so I mean, it's again a testament to it's a compliment to your you know to yourself that you're able to you know what to do in terms of how to foster these things, and I can only imagine the vehicle of the awards. It'll make the award more valuable to writers and retain the prestigious nature of it, which is, you know, it is obviously the important prize in this province.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, like, thank you for that. That's really generous of you. But I do think that it, the prizes is a whole new beast to work with.
Yeah.
And I think that we're going to be able to do some interesting things. And I think that what the main agent for change will be is a willingness to listen to what people want, what people are thinking, and then to start incorporating those ideas. And that's not dissimilar to the other projects that you've mentioned. A lot of it really is just talking to people and going, yeah. So what should we do? What do you think? And then people have cool, good ideas, you know,
Incorporate them. What have you found in terms of, because the community, the literary community here in this town certainly has gone through ups and downs in the last 10 years.
Definitely.
We don't need to get into what's happened with certain people and the sort. Have we gotten past that in terms of, I mean, are we able to have conversations with each other that are better now than say? I mean, I know.
I think the answer is yes. I think it's a qualified yes, though.
Because, I mean, Twitter is such a part of it, and we know how toxic that is, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's evolving, right? Everything is evolving. The conversations are evolving, and there have been some, in some ways, I think about some of the situations, the dumpster fires or the toxic spills that have occurred over the past, say, 5 or so years. They've done real harm to people, you know? And I do think, however, that through my own experience, that conversations are changing and people are recognizing, people are recognizing when to pull back, when to reach out, how to manage their expression in such a way that it isn't always flaming blades of this or that, you know.
And to interrupt you, what I think it has encouraged is a new sort of ecosystem, if you will, and a better one. You know, I've always said, you know, as terrible as the Trump era has been, as awful as this Don Cherry business has been the last several weeks, it's given us an opportunity to see what people really think, and to see what people have thought but hadn't said heretofore. And I think at that point, you know, it's not pleasant to read the president's tweets, but I think we get a sense of who he is and who his supporters are. And if you have to burn the village to save it, I know it's a dreadful metaphor, if it's a metaphor or not. You know, at the end of the day, something better will happen. I mean, you can only go up from down, right?
Well, I feel like I agree with you on that. I think that what it strikes me as is that it's language. It comes back to language, right? Twitter, sure, there's tons of memes on there. There's cats.
And we think we're connected, don't we? And we're not.
But, I mean, I think that, you know, the impeachment hearings, for example, and what's going on there, you have to pay attention to the language that people are using and how they're using it. And, you know, like, we don't have to get into a giant diatribe about Trump or anything like that. But he is, he's not an articulate man in the sense that words mean something. He's a very articulate man. If words can mean a whole bunch of things and it doesn't really matter.
It changes the meaning day, hour to hour. Even.
Dependent on the audience. Like, it's how the audience takes it, not how the speaker intends it. And so I feel like yes, to go all the way back to answer your question, I think we're at a better spot now than we were. But I do think that that we have a ways to go.
I mean, we have seen voices that I hadn't heard of before.
Know,
and which is a great thing. But at the same time, we do have a ways to go. Back to why you took on the job, because I mean, there's a lot of political things with regards to awards, who gets them, who decides, and the sort. Was there any question in your mind as to whether awards remained relevant? I mean, a lot of people, you know, just take the Academy Awards, for example. If you're a film fan or a film devotee, you might not put much stock into who wins an Oscar, right?
Yeah, Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just that's a whole other level, right? I feel like there's a couple things happening there. One is like an Oscar, I think, any prize means that within your own echelon, mm-hmm. you're going to have more notoriety and more awareness of your work. You as a professional.
And you can work more, right?
Yeah. You as a professional, yeah. as a writer, are going to get asked to go. You're gonna get shortlisted for other prizes, right? You're going to get asked to do some op-eds. You're gonna get asked to write another book about this or whatever. It increases your relevance in terms of the people who are paying attention, and obviously, it increases your ability to make a little bit more money, which is kind of the key. One of the key elements to this is to reward excellence, and by rewarding excellence, you're also giving all of these people on the shortlist, not just the winner. The opportunity to be seen and to get paid, mm-hmm. frankly. And, you know, like, I think that what we have to do, and to go back to your Oscars analogy, one of the problems with the Oscars is they run a terrible show. it's because they're paralyzed, because they've gotten so big that they can't make a mistake. And, of course, what does that do? It leads to mistakes. Right? And so the goal with the prizes, for sure, is to loosen up a little bit and to try and remember that everybody's human and that we are here to celebrate excellence and we are a community that, that you know, supports one another. And, of course, there's going to be squabbles and issues and people are going to not want to sit at the same table.
Sure, yeah.
You know, like, that's not something I ever expect to be able to prevent, mm-hmm. 100%. But I do think that we can do a better job of being more accessible and really kind of bringing the community together in ways that maybe they haven't in the last little while.
It's a marvelous commitment to take on, and I think it's something that obviously that you and your board and the folks around you, I think, will make real, you know, and that's obviously
the board is super supportive and very enthusiastic, you know, like they were the ones who voted to increase the prize money. That wasn't me saying anything, because it's a board decision, right? So they're committed.
Yeah. You're an old bookseller from way back.
Yes, sir.
And we're coming up to the Christmas. You know, I think of the Advent book blog.
Remember that? Yeah. That was a great project.
Yeah, you and Julie Wilson.
Yeah.
Are there books that you're thinking about in terms of, let's say you had to hand sell something to someone in terms of a book for this?
Yeah. No, well, you know what? I certainly can't touch any BC books, BC UConn books, but I just got in. Oh, okay, I'll give you two. One, the new Jeff Vandermeer book is called Dead Astronauts, and he did the Area X trilogy, and they made the movie of the first book, whose name is escaping me right now. But he's a fantastic writer.
The Martian?
No. It was Annihilation.
Oh yes.
Yeah. It was a great film.
Yeah.
And a great book, great trilogy. Anyway, his new book is coming out. It's called Dead Astronauts. It's got a gorgeous cover. It's a beautiful book. And my feeling is it's going to be really, really weird and very interesting.
Yeah.
And then the other book that I would give as a gift, absolutely, and you can give this to anybody, is the new McSweeney's collection of humor. And it's a doorstop, right?
Yeah.
It's a big book, hardcover. It's called Keep Scrolling Till You Feel Something. And that would be the book that I would recommend. You know, you don't know, you know somebody who reads a lot and they tell the occasional joke, they got a good sense of humor or whatever. That's a book. It's like, I don't know, $35, $40, but it's a beautiful hardcover. I think it's got a gilded golden fringe on the pages, and it's a bit ostentatious, but it's, you know, it's McSweeney, so it's going to be hilarious.
Did you find that in your years of selling books, whether you worked here or you worked elsewhere, that sort of stuff, when someone walked in the store needing a gift, I mean, those sort of baubles and bangles were things that they were looking for?
Yeah, not always. Sometimes. Yeah. But usually they don't know what they're looking for, right? So you kind of got to draw it out of them. And, you know, I guess, you know, like new fiction is is an easy way to go. That's why, in some ways, that's why the things like Margaret Atwood sell so much.
And prizes, right?
Right?
I mean, people want to read the new Booker. They want to read who win the Giller, or who's shortlisted for the Giller, right?
Yeah.
That sort of stuff comes.
Yeah, for sure. You're coming into Christmas season, so you're going to go into your favorite bookstore, and there's going to be all of those. You know, Vancouver has a ton of great independent bookstores, so you will go in there and see some of those big-name books that are going to be out there, but you're going to see all these really interesting either local books or internationally published books. And the thing about the Booker is, you know, quite apart from the fact that, you know, that it's so interesting that they gave the award to two people. They gave it to Margaret and to this other writer whose name I forget. Evaristo, I believe is her name. And it's interesting. It's almost as though, you know, the judges were like, well, we want to give it to Evaristo, but this book is so difficult that we're not going to sell any copies of this book. So I guess we kind of got to have another thing. How about Margaret? It's kind of like we'll give her the Lifetime Achievement Booker. And we'll split it in half and blah, blah, blah. I think it's the wrong decision. They should have just given it to Evaristo, but it's just weird.
Yeah.
It's part of the weirdness of prize culture is that every once in a while this stupid stuff happens and you just got to eat it.
And that's one of the things that is refreshing, is that you'll be able to talk to us regularly, I hope, here and elsewhere, about, you know, striking back against the sort of the myths of prize culture and the sort of, and because it's such a rich place that it a lot of the political stuff does get in the way, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's back to the Oscars comment, like, I think part of the problem is the opacity. They protect this opacity, this you can't see inside the box.
Mm-hmm.
When actually, it's not that complicated.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to protect people's anonymity. If the judge is going to go out onto Twitter and say, hey, I'm really honored to be a judge for the thing, this is great, that's fine. But if you don't do that, it's our job to protect you until the gala happens and then we announce it, right? And so I think that there are some aspects of the of prize culture that do need to, on a timely basis, be managed, right? Just protecting people's identity so that they aren't going to get harassed, right? But otherwise, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be talking about this, because people do have questions, and people are asking these questions all the time. When I was on the jury, I had questions. I had no idea what was going on.
Sure.
So I hope that part of what I can bring to the BC UConn Book Prizes is at least that.
Yeah.
Willingness to have conversations and to listen to people who might have better ideas.
And it points to just how rich, I mean, it was at first an impossible task to look at all these books and have to try to think.
I know.
As to, you know, narrowing it down from 80 or so.
Yeah, and you only have, what, like 2.5 months?
Something like that, yeah. But you think at the beginning, you think, oh, this is manageable, right? But then you do, you know, it lights a fire under your ass, and you work hard because it's obviously an important job that one has.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not about you at this point. You just want to make sure that, you know, you get your ballot in time because, you know, the whole system is, you know, dependent on it.
Yeah.
But again, you just see how much great stuff is written about this place that's published here.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine just how much fun that might be for someone who's the executive director.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it, Ben. This is really, I'm just entering into my my first, officially being in charge of the whole process.
Yeah.
And it is highly administrative, and it's not my favorite thing to do to that type of administration. But we're going to try and build a team so that everybody can work to their strengths, you know, and we'll see what happens.
And there are other events too, not just the gala. Obviously, that you do plan events outside of Vancouver, over the award season, if you will.
Yeah.
So that people can meet these authors.
Yeah. And we're hoping that we can do a tour from Whitehorse to Dawson City, and we're going to hit as many points inside of remote interior north. South coastal BC as we can.
And everything else is good with you?
Yeah, it's great.
It's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's nice to see you too, man.
Yeah.
You should come to our, I'll make sure to invite you to our 10th anniversary show in February. You can come see Real Vancouver's 10th anniversary.
Finally, after 10 years.
After 10 years.
I've talked to you about this for 10 years, and now I finally get to go.
Yeah.
At Sean Cranberry is the Twitter handle. BCBookPrizes.ca is the website. Sean Cranberry, join me in person here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.